We would like to advise that the following program may contain adult themes, occasional nudity, and language that may offend some listeners.
Thank God it's... Thank God it's...
Welcome to the Lynn Lee Evans Music Studio at the ABC in Ultimo for another edition of Thank God It's Friday. I'm Richard Glover, and this week the fabulous Fred Smith. Please welcome him. And our panel, ladies and gentlemen, Gary Eck, Gene Kitson and Tommy Dean. But first, as always, here is the news from nowhere. If you enjoy tales of sex mixed with bondage, you'll love what's happening to the world's female writers, nearly all of whom have been placed in legal handcuffs and forced to come up with some sort of sequel to 50 Shades of Grey. Now, 50 Shades of Grey is the S&M romance that has left the publishing world scrambling. 31 million copies have been sold worldwide. Bondage emporiums report a boom in sale of fluffy handcuffs. A film version is in the offing. No wonder every publisher now wants a flick of the whip. Every available author has been signed up to write something similar. Literary novelists are asked to slum it. Cookbook authors have been pressed into service. Even the authors of technical manuals have been asked to give it a go. They're told, if you can describe the putting together of flat-pack furniture, surely a sex scene isn't a stretch. In countless darkened garrets, ladies and gentlemen, the shadowy scene is played out. The publisher, dressed in a dark power suit, runs a finger over the rough edges of the contract as the poor writer bends over her keyboard. Growls the publisher, "Next I'm going to bring out the non-completion clause." "Not the non-completion clause," whimpers the poor author, fingers pounding once more in response. "Yes, the non-completion clause," says the publisher. "Go easy," begs the author as she works. "It's not easy to type when you're wearing fluffy handcuffs." The completed novels will all be published under pseudonyms, of course, but there's great sport in trying to work out the identity of the authors. A chapter that begins with a list of required ingredients, one gimp mask, one pair of handcuffs, one riding crop, is surely the work of a moonlighting cookbook writer, especially when each sex scene begins with a notation of time required and level of difficulty. The title page might list the author as Fluffy Bottomley, but really it's Margaret Fulton earning pin money towards a new range hood. Too many botanical references, and it's a clue that Shirley Stackhouse has been forced to take a break from the gardening books. And if the phrase, "let's get dirty," leads to a scene of unrestrained composting, it may be Peter Kundal breaking into a new line of work. The writers of technical manuals are guns for hire, so it's hardly surprising that many of them have been signed up. After years of composing IKEA catalogues, it can be hard to change styles. There are many giveaways. Among them, the sentence, "Gray approached her tenderly and suggested that before attempting to connect part A and part B, it was important both were facing each other. Otherwise, accidents could happen." Now, some publishers have decided instead to simply rewrite the classics with added sex. You'll think I've made this up, but true. Pan Macmillan next month is publishing a racy rewrite of Charlotte Bronte's most famous book under the title Jane Eyre Laid Bare. True. The author, one Eve Sinclair, describes it as an erotic version of my favourite classic. Well, we can only wait for other publishers to follow suit, presumably with titles such as A Tale of Two Titties, Crotch 22, and King Lear. With Moby Dick and Horatio Hornblower, I guess they'll just keep the titles and rework the settings. The main problem, I think, will be with the literary types. These days they're into exploding narratives in which the story is told in any old order. That's confusing enough with a family saga, but positively mystifying when it comes to pornography. In the hands of Siri Hustvedt or Jennifer Egan, you'll start out tied to a wheel in the Hellfire Club, but by book's end be teaching Sunday school in a small town in Minnesota. Maybe in their hands the genre might finally prove uplifting instead of what it is, Mills and Boone whipped up. And that's the news from nowhere. Gary Eck, Gene Kitson and Tommy Dean are here. Yeah. Are here. Welcome.
Hello.
Thank you, Richard.
Surely you've been hired by. Thank you.
Yes.
Do you like my new
your green fluffy jacket?
Elf green fluffy jacket.
Elf green.
Bought on sale this morning as a birthday present to self.
It's gorgeous.
It makes me look not a day over 65.
It looks like you could do something with, you know, a Mills and Boone whipped up in that jacket.
Well,
it's very debonair.
It's velour.
It felt like the real thing. It felt like velvet.
Well, if you can't get a quick feel up from Gene Kitson on your 54th birthday, what's the point? Now, let's check you up to date with this week's news. Which new media player thinks that Springfield is no place for minors?
Well... This is the story that was reported in the Australian Financial Review about Gina Rinehart, who thinks that who wants the Simpsons dropped as family viewing. But I,
because she's on the board of Channel 10.
She's on the board of Channel 10. But I actually don't believe that story.
Don't
well,
you?
Because I think anyone who has lived with Lang, been brought up by Lang, has been to board meetings since she was 12, worked in the mining industry with 99% blokes and met John Singleton, I don't think there's anything that she would find wrong with the Simpsons, quite frankly.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything she couldn't handle. You know, and also I have to say another reason why I do think that the story is not quite true is that it has originated from the Australian Fin Review, which is a sort of new idea for bankers. They do love a bit of gossip, the Fin Review. And I just think if the Fin Review was so clever, then why isn't Fairfax rich?
Why has Gina got all the money? Exactly.
I'm angry if it's true. I'm furious because it's one of my most loved shows.
Me too.
You know, and it's Fox Network's most popular show, one of them. And there she's saying, oh, it's not suitable, it's not suitable for families. I mean, it's about a dysfunctional family whose father, right, the father works for a tyrannical billionaire. Hello, Gina. Does it sound familiar? I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, how could it not be suitable? I mean, maybe, you know, pillaging the land of all its resources, earning $52 million a day and having utter contempt for your own children is not suitable as well. Come on.
Tommy, what do you reckon?
I think it just makes me sad. If I had as much money as she had, not only... Not do I also love The Simpsons. I would hire the entire voice cast to just sit in my house and read me the latest scripts. It would be live-action Simpsons in my house for the money. Oh, the fun we'd have.
The fun. Hank Azaria. Imagine spending an afternoon with him.
I've written a... Because I reckon they should cast... Gina in an episode. Oh, okay. That'll placate the situation because, like, Rupert Murdoch.
Rupert Murdoch has appeared as himself several times.
He loves it.
Yeah.
He loves it.
And now he loves it. I mean, he hated The Simpsons, then they cast him, and now he loves it. So if you do
I
the
thought
same
Mr. Burns was Rupert Murdoch.
It is Rupert Murdoch.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
So what's Gina going to play?
Well, it's going to be a love interest between Gina and Montgomery Burns. And this is a script. This is just written just now. As Montgomery Burns. I hope so. Smithers, who is that sprightly young temptress? Gina Rinehart, sir, worth $28 billion. Yeah, excellent. Have my genitals removed from cryogenics and thawed ready for action. I have them in my pocket, sir.
Gary Eck. Very nice. Now, which political party is green with envy this week? What's a political party green with
green
envy?
With envy.
Oh, well, that would be the Labor Party.
Labor Party.
The Labor Party, because
exactly.
They want to... They want to draw away from the Greens. They're peeved with the Greens.
The Greens are doing so well in the polls, but they won't compromise for Labor, Labor says.
Yeah, well, that's what Labor said. But, I mean the Labor's in a coalition with the Greens in Tasmania, and they're down to 19%, so doing well is all relative. And you'd think if they knew that... Why would they give so much power to a party that 89% of Australians voted against? You don't get 89% of Australians voting against anything. You don't even get 89% of Australians, you know, agreeing to anything. You can't get 89% of Australians agreeing that kittens are cute. You know, it's really hard to do.
No, they're not.
Exactly. There's my point.
It's like a bad relationship, you know, where, you know, the couple are pretending to be in love and really the marriage has been over for a long time and Labor's just faking, you know, faking their policies, you know. Oh, carbon tax. Oh, yeah, yeah, give it to them. Oh, woo.
Especially at moments they think they've got an election coming on.
How can you top that? I'm out of here.
Now, which
I have to say, yes. That first Labor attacks Kevin Rudd as a dysfunctional maniac, and now it's attacking the Greens as a dysfunctional maniac. Mm. It's like seeing a scorpion try to sting itself to death.
Find a mirror, you reckon. Now, which company is on a financial rocky road?
See, this is my favourite story, Luke. And by the way, thank you for ignoring me on the political talk. That was nice.
Yeah, we know, Tommy.
No, you've learned long ago that I've got nothing to add. That's right. That's what I heard in that story. I heard blah, 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 Greece, blah, 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 blah. This is my favourite, only because I think it's sad, of course, that Daryl Lee, this is the story of Daryl Lee finding themselves, as you put it here, on a rocky road.
Yeah.
I love the summoners. And there was so many excellent, almost everything I saw said rocky road, but there were so many other ways they could have said it. Ooh, their finances are tied up with a licorice rope. Ooh, it seems their finances are a little bit peanut brittle. Oh, it seems that everything's come to a bit of a hard crack. There were so many great ways to say it.
Hi, this man is a summoner.
Yeah, that would have been nice, but... Personally, and this is, I probably shouldn't tell you this, but years ago, I did a corporate party for the Rocky Road people, and they didn't like me at all, so screw them, I'm glad they're gone.
Actually, I reckon I did the year, one year as well, at the Daryl Lee, like, Christmas function. I rocked up to the gig.
And they didn't like that sort of material?
I said, where's the stage? And they went, oh, stage? Oh, you need a stage, do you? Yeah. I said, oh, yeah. I said, oh, don't worry about it. Oh, where's the microphone? Oh, do you need a microphone? There was no microphone. I had to use the DJ's microphone, and the cord went for a meter. So I had to stand next to the DJ.
A bad workman.
Same story. I stood next to the DJ with the short cord, and then the DJ hated me more than they did. And you could feel him, like, reeling me back in. Give me back my microphone.
And the DJ's heckling you. They can't hear the DJ heckling you. He's going, get off, man. Not funny.
The dark, bitter side of Daryl Lee.
But that's right. That's not Daryl Lee's fault. Don't you say, this is what my requirements are?
You
as professional performers, yeah. You are.
Well, see, that was my mistake. I said I need every flavor of licorice times two. I went home with an excellent gift bag. Don't get me wrong.
You remember last year? I don't know how they've gone broke. You know, like, I have no idea how they've gone broke. Remember last year when a car ploughed into the store at George Street? Remember, or was it the year before? There was an accident on the corner of George Street where they are.
Yeah,
and
it's a rocky road at that point.
The car ploughed into their shop. And everyone came from miles around. They climbed over the car and the driver and went straight in and looted the shop.
Thank God it's Friday.
Thank God it's Friday with Richard Glover.
We have Jean Kitson, Tommy Dean and Gary Eck, and we also have the wonderful Fred Smith. Now, if you've heard Fred Smith on the radio before, you won't need this introduction, but if you haven't, he's a very special singer-songwriter in that he sings beautifully, writes beautiful songs, but he's also a ridgy-didge diplomat, and he's been working in Afghanistan, being the liaison person between the Australian troops that live there and, of course, the local warlords. So it gives him an incredible insight into the sort of treatment that our troops have received, the sort of heroism of our troops and what has happened. He's written this beautiful cycle of songs called The Dust of Uruzgan, which talks about these things. It's a record which, if you've heard it, I think will become, in a few years' time, like I Was Only 19 or like when the band played Waltz in Matilda. It'll be one of those iconic pieces of music through which Australians understand the experience of war. It has one funny song on it. And he's come to play it for us. Fred, good afternoon.
Richard, how are you?
Good. Now, you were, as people know, in Uruzgan province, the Australians were for the most part working besides the Dutch, weren't they?
That's right. When I showed up there in 2009, the Dutch ran the place. They had 2,000 soldiers. And generally speaking, our soldiers got on pretty well with the Dutch, although there were a few cultural issues. Firstly, the Dutch had this sort of fierce proclivity for lycra, which offended the sensibility of the Australian soldiers. But secondly, they had this cultural practice called swaffling, and occasionally diggers would come in and say, hey, the Dutchies have been swaffling in the Dixies again.
Now, definitions?
And I needed to find out about this, so I asked a Dutch diplomat who was working there, and he said, well,
Swaffling, yes, it's a Dutch cultural practice. It just means to swing your penis backwards and forwards and bump it up against something. I said to him...
And the Dixie?
I said, well, is this popular in Holland, Alex? He said, well, yes, more so amongst the men than the women. I said, how did it become so popular? He said, well, it became very popular through YouTube. You see, two Dutch tourists filmed one another swaffling the Taj Mahal. Footage of this went viral and started a whole craze of Dutch tourists travelling around the world swaffling national monuments like the Sphinx and the Eiffel Tower. And I got very worried because we spend a lot of money on counter-terrorism here in Australia, but what were we doing to counter the swaffling threat? And so I sent a cable back to Canberra recommending a series of countermeasures, including biometric testing for Dutch tourists at the border and passing an electric current through the Sydney Harbour Bridge. It was not received well, but we had a more immediate problem in the basin as far as the Dutch soldiers were swaffling in the Dixies, and the Dixies were the plastic portaloos that proliferate around the base. And it fell to me as a political advisor to do something about this because the digger, it's sacred space. The Dixie, it's the Dunny. So I wrote the following song. It's called Nit Swaffling Op de Dixie.
And you sang this to the Dutch themselves to get the message across?
I did.
Brave man.
Sing along. I've heard that when the Taliban held power in Kabul, they messed up people's lives with lots of silly rules. Women were illegal, and so was flying kites. And God defend the kind of men who like to dress in tights. I wouldn't want to be like Taliban and tell you what to do. I'm fighting here for freedom after all, just like you. I respect your lowlands culture, and I love you very much. But there is one important thing I say to all you Dutch. Nit swaffling op de Dixie, it's against the law. Nit swaffling op de Dixie, we're trying to fight a war. And if you're swaffling in that Dixie like a Dixie swaffling man, how the hell are we supposed to defeat the Taliban? So nit swaffling op de Dixie, nit, nit. Nit, nit, swaffling up the Dixie. There isn't enough room. If I find that you've been swaffling in that Dixie, I'll tell Brigadier Van Oom, and he'll have you court-martialed and sent back to The Hague, where they'll put your dick on a table and whack it with a spade. So nit, swaffling up the Dixie. Nit, nit, nit. Nit, swaffling up the Dixie. It really isn't fair. There are people who need to use that Dixie, and you could swaffle anywhere. You could swaffle in Paris, you could swaffle in Rome, you could swaffle in the Taj Mahal, or wait till you get home. You could swaffle in the shower block with shampoo or soap. You could swaffle with the RSM or with the bloody Pope. But nit, swaffling off the Dixie. Nit, nit, nit. Nit swaffling up the Dixie, it really is quite gross. Once a week they clean those Dixies with a great big vacuum hose. And if you're swaffling in that Dixie on a lazy Saturday, you may find yourself fellatioed in the most unpleasant way. It'll grab you, it'll suck you, till there is nothing left. What's the BDA, that's the Battle Damage Assessment, gonna say about your cause of death, that you died swaffling in the Dixie? Nit, nit, nit. Sing along. Nit, 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 swaffling up the Dixie. Nit, nit, nit. Anyway, Richard, this song, Nit Swaffling Up the Dixie, has proved very popular with schoolchildren in Canberra. So if you need a copy for your grandchild, come and get a copy. We'll be playing at Notes in Newtown on the 10th of August. Or have a look at my website, fredsmith.com.au. But the sad end of the story is that the Dutch left Oruzgan province in the summer of 2010. It was a very tough summer. They were very confused and sad about going. And then they lost the soccer final and got a bit morose about that. But anyway, we had a farewell concert for them just to pay tribute to their contribution. And I wrote this last verse. Well, Dutch friends, I've heard you're leaving. I know you've made this plan. Because swaffling's become illegal here in Oruzgan. But when you're back in Holland, you can swaffle what you like. You can swaffle in a windmill.
You can swaffle in a dyke. You can swaffle in a hash pipe. In Leiden or Helene, but you can't swaffle the World Cup because the bloody thing's in Spain. So knit, swaffling off the Dixie. Knit, knit, knit.
Fred Smith, ladies and gentlemen, with the only funny song to come out of the war in Afghanistan. You can see Fred Smith at the Notes venue in Enmore. He's playing Friday, August 10. His album, Dust of Uruzgan, is one of the most incredible albums I've heard in this last couple of years. It's got amazing songs, including one funny one, which we heard today. So thank you to Fred Smith. You loved it, Tommy.
That was great. That was really great. I just have to ask. At the end of it, you said there was, you presented it to the Dutch. Was there any chance that they swaffled the singer?
Yes, and but aren't we good that we've been? Aren't you pleased that we're represented diplomatically by people like Fred Smith? What a way to get the message through to our Dutch colleagues. It is 5:30 on TGIF. I'm Richard Glover. We have with us Gene Kitson, Tommy Dean, and Gary Eck, and we have some news headlines for you. Helen Zaremas, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Richard. A major union says the coalition's comments on industrial relations policy have set off alarm bells. The CFMEU says Tony Abbott's comment that he would make laws more workable is normally code for taking away people's conditions. Doctors say a change in attitude to rostering is crucial to reducing their excessive work hours. The Australian Medical Association's latest audit has found some doctors work up to 43 hours straight. A Japanese court has dismissed a woman's case against Google. She claimed Google breached her privacy after its Street View service published pictures of her underwear drying on her balcony. The All Ords has closed 12 points higher at 4,118. The ASX 200 is up 14 points at 4,082. The dollar's buying 101.61 US cents, and there'll be more news at 6.
Helen, thank you, and stop trying to get more laughs than the comedians. Helen Zaremas, ladies and gentlemen. On the roads front, at Darling Harbour, the Western Distributor at the Harris Street off-ramp, an accident there, westbound lane 2, significant delays. At Callaghan, the University Drive at Queen Street, a spillage of oil has closed westbound traffic. And at the Narrabri Shire Council area, various roads are affected by flooding. And at Coonabarabran, same story, various roads affected by adverse weather. That's the latest traffic. What's the weather like for the weekend? Graham Creed, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Richard. Well, it's improving for many parts of New South Wales, although we still have a flood watch out for parts of the northern slopes at the moment. But the good news there is that the rain will begin to ease off tomorrow, contracting up into the far northeastern corner of the state, and it should clear as we head into Sunday. Through the south of the state, we've got showers fairly widespread over the southern inland, particularly near the Victorian border. They'll be more frequent about the southwest slopes, falling as snow down by the evening to around 1,000 metres. We could even see some of that snow creeping up towards the western side of the central tablelands overnight Saturday. We could see snow then down to about 1,200 metres. So some cold conditions across the south, but elsewhere it's going to be relatively mild and sunny. In Sydney, we're looking at top temperatures tomorrow of 17 to 19 degrees. And as I said, mostly sunny conditions on Sunday, a little bit windier. So temperatures dropping back to around about 15 to 17. But again, clear sunny skies. The wind's around about up to 30 kilometres per hour. So if you can get out of that breeze, it's going to be very pleasant.
OK, Graham Creed will now make his way out of the theatre here. And remember, no swaffling the weatherman. It's not allowed. Please thank him. Now, the Transport Minister, Gladys Berejiklian, has this week introduced a new policy at CityRail requiring staff to gain permission before they grow facial hair. She's banned employees from wearing sunglasses on the top of their heads and had created a new offence if you have your shirt out and your sleeves rolled up. What job did you have in which you had to wear a uniform or tidy up your appearance, and did it create an esprit de corps in the way the Minister is suggesting? Now, Gene Kitson, I remember you once telling me about your role as a young chemist at the age of about 17 or 18, and painting a picture of yourself in the white uniform that stays with me still.
Yeah, well, that was my first job. I was in a chemist shop in Sorrento and I was 14, and I was given a white uniform and then shown how to lean on the counter. And that was about it. I didn't have any training. And you probably are thinking about that story I told where I probably looked professional, but one day a man came into the shop. Well, do you want to hear the story?
Yeah,
is that
yeah.
all right? Well, one day a man came into the shop. So I'm 14. I felt pretty good about myself, except I didn't have any training. And one day a man came into the shop and he was really old. He was about 40. And I went up to him and I said, oh, may I help you? And he looked around the shop and there was no one else to serve him. And he sort of looked at me and then he said, I'll have a comb, he said. His eyes are lighting on a stand of combs near the counter. So I sold him a comb and he left the shop. And about half an hour later, he came back and I said, oh, may I help you? And he looked around the shop and there was still no one there to serve him. And then he looked at me in my pert white uniform with my pert body thrusting through the flimsy fabric of my smock. And he took a deep breath and he said, yes, I'd like some gossamer, please. Now, I had the uniform, but I didn't know gossamer was a brand of contraceptive. I only knew gossamer as a hairspray. And so I said to him, certainly, sir, what do you want, normal or hard to hold? It's true, he left the shop. A uniform didn't help me.
Have you ever had to wear a uniform, Tommy?
No. I was thinking through this. The only real job I've ever had is delivering pizza. And even in that, all you had to wear was like the red T-shirt of the thing. And that was it. Yeah, that was it. There was no uniform at the time. Nothing. I've never had... The only place that I've ever been where I've hung out where like a style became an issue was I played golf. I don't play as much now, but in my day I played quite a bit. And golf courses have some very severe restrictions. And I've been sent home for, you know, certain clubs won't allow cargo pants. Mm-hmm. And I had some amazing arguments about that. Well, you know, the cargo pants have lots of pockets, and this is a sport that needs lots of things in pockets. And we don't believe in pockets. My favorite one was playing with these guys at a club in Sydney. And all I remember is that the guy, the starter, has the microphone. He sits in the thing, and we can just suddenly hear the starter come over. Would the gentleman on the tee box please tuck their shirt in? We all looked around, and one of the fellows we were playing with...
I didn't know Glassberry Jicklin worked in a golf club.
But this guy we were with was huge, you know? And again, I say, would the gentleman on the first tee box please tuck their shirt in? And finally, this very large fellow just leaned back and yelled as loud as he could, it doesn't fit! And then literally, like, carry on then.
Gary Eck, have you worn a uniform?
Yeah, well, when I was young, I worked at McDonald's, and obviously you had to wear a uniform there. But that's the kind of uniform you never wore to work. Like you didn't sort of hop on the bus wearing the McDonald's uniform because you would get beaten up. I remember one day I rocked up to work and I'd forgotten my uniform. And I said, I haven't got my uniform. And they said, oh, look, the only spare one we've got is a girl's one. And so I put it on and no one said anything.
It fitted like perfectly.
So very sad indeed. But
So I thought it'd be the opposite. If you don't have a uniform, I guess today you'll have to be the manager.
That would have been.
I found a pay slip back then and it was $4.24 an hour.
So
that was the managers as well. Hasn't changed.
Now, it is Wheel of Death time, I have to tell you, which Whoa. If you've joined us before, you know the deal. Our lovely audience who have come here today to the ABC and Ultimo, just before we went on air, have thrown some topics onto a chocolate wheel, which stands here.
Not sponsored by Daryl Lee.
Not sponsored by Daryl. Yeah, a non-rocky road. Now, here we go. The topics that they've thrown on the board for Tommy are junk mail, goat stew...
Birthdays.
Innately comic.
Sorry.
Birthdays, Higgs boson, Candida.
I believe it's related to birthdays.
Kiss, mud cake, Sarah Palin, golf, dinosaurs, baby Alfie, from Offspring, aging rock stars, Friday the 13th, and pet snakes. Are you ready?
I am.
Whichever topic comes up, Tommy's got to jump up and talk about for about 3 minutes and hopefully make us laugh. Here we go. Round and round and round and round it goes. Where it stops, nobody knows. Tommy's topic for the Wheel of Death is pet snakes, ladies and gentlemen. Who suggested pet snakes? Who suggested pet snakes? Okay, you've got a copy of Single Father starring David Tennant from the ABC shop, which says mature themes, coarse language, and sexual references. So congratulations on that. Tommy.
I'm assuming this has become a hot topic because I believe you may have read the story recently this week that a father awoke in the evening to find his young son being eaten by a python. Which is every father's 53rd deepest nightmare. You think of all the things that could happen to your children, python in the bassinet. Ooh, that's a danger. I've never truly understood why people have pet snakes. They strike me as one of the least loving of the pets. I can't really... they do hug. Granted, there are certain snakes that will hug. They do come in occasionally handy for the naughty penthouse spread. Ooh, naughty. Because, of course, the snake representing the devil in the Garden of Eden, I'm assuming they also sit well with Apple products. That would be nice. But generally speaking, I've never truly understood why you would have the pet snake. Because it seems that every person that's ever had a pet snake also at any point must have the Wires phone number on speed dial for that moment where, of course, the snake has escaped. Because snakes will escape. If you've seen snakes on a plane, you know you can't contain them. Those things get out and cause terror wherever they go. The other reason I just can't condone snake pets is it then, of course, leads to live feeding. The only way to truly take care of a live snake is to feed it live food. So I imagine then you spend a lot of time at the pet shop talking about the various rats, the sizes they come in, and exactly if they should go in face front or tail. I only bring that up because a friend of mine had a pet snake, and I believe you just kind of leave the snake to his own devices, depending, but he used to like to feed the mouse to his snake tail first because he felt it was fun to watch the rat's face as it worked out exactly what was about to happen. Can't remember if that was the funny part or the terrible part. When I watched this happen a couple of times, and I'm just to be fair to rats, I think that they, like Kristen Stewart, have very little by way of emoting. I mean, a rat's face just sitting in its own happy place looks much the same as it does just as it's about to go down the belly. I think it's one of the beauties of the rat. Actually, given a choice, I think I would rather have pet rats because they seem to take it all, you know, the way they're just happy. Or not sad. It's really hard to tell if they're happy or sad or upset. They're just as happy to be food, is what I'm saying, as to be alive. I think maybe that's the only reason to really condone the snake as a pet, is to remind you that some things just accept life the way it is. And that's the news from now.
Tommy D. Does he survive the gladiator? Is it thumbs up, thumbs down? Oh, he survived.
I prefer medium thumbs, I agree. Yeah.
Of course, if he hadn't have survived, he'd be fed to a snake.
But I think it was very thought-provoking.
It was.
It was.
And somewhat disturbing.
Well, very disturbing. But then I thought, if you were a rat and you were being consumed backwards into a python, because the python doesn't actually bite you, you sort of would be sucked into this warm area. It'd probably be quite pleasant until the digestive processes started happening.
You could be alive. Also, I didn't say it, but he also seemed to suggest that it gave the rat a fighting chance to walk back out.
Well, Dr. Nitschke's latest machine is basically doing that. It's going to be a large python, which you just sort of throw yourself face forward into. Apparently it's a lovely death. 17 to 6 is the time. Now, a new CD this week from Abby Dobson and Lara Goodridge called Baby et Lulu is going to be released tomorrow on Bastille Day. And it celebrates that point where French music was just the most sophisticated thing you could listen to. I don't know if it was like this with your parents, but I remember my father listening to Charles Aznavour and Serge Gainsbourg and Francois Hardy. And in Sydney, this is in the 60s probably, there were books like Ode for a French Wife, a cookbook which introduced Australians to the high French style. Now, I wondered, when you were young, what were the things that your parents and maybe you thought were the last word in style and sophistication? Gary Eck.
Yes. Well, when I was young, I remember my mum used to cook rabbit and call it chicken a la hop. We thought it was brilliant, you know. My dad would sit there twitching his nose. We still didn't pick up on it. We had chicken a la hop every night. We thought we were like the swishest family in the neighbourhood.
I didn't know you'd grown up during the Depression.
Apparently so, yeah. My mum had a gun. I didn't even get the hint when she'd go out shooting in the park. And remember Spumante? Remember that? Remember when that was a top shelf wine?
Yeah.
No, really. I remember, maybe it was just my dad was a tight ass or something. I don't know.
See, to an American ear, it's not a wine label. It's an instruction.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even the name itself suggests what's going to happen. Yeah. I mean, it's got the word spoon in it. Hello. Even I think Manti is just the Italian word for bucket.
So it's not a wine label. It's a prediction, I think.
I think it's a prediction.
We had something called Moselle, I think it was. Moselle.
Oh, yeah. I think it was Benin Moselle. Mm.
Yeah, that was the wine that reeked of sophistication until later when you worked out it didn't.
Yeah.
That was the only wine you could buy was Benin Moselle or Liebfrau Milch.
Yeah. It was $1.99 back then, and it's still $1.99, which is the tragedy. And do you remember KT26, those shoes? Oh, that's my other...
KT what?
They were called KT26, yeah, and they were the most expensive shoe in about 1985. If you had a pair of KT26, you're like, wow, man, your parents must be rich. They must drink Spumante, man. But now KT26 is sold exclusively to Kmart, I think. And it's actually cheaper. It's cheaper now. It's like the same price. Like it's $40 back in 1985, and it's still $40. And now it's like the bottom end.
The wonderful achievement. Now, what was the most sophisticated thing, Tom?
The most sophisticated thing that you could do in our neighborhood was own a brand new car. That was, didn't matter what the kind of car it was, if you bought it new, if it came new, oh, you were styling. We did that once. Once. And what happened 2 weeks later? My dad crashed it. That would ruin us. Ruin us for the family, because then we totaled it. And then, of course, we had to buy a used car from then and for the rest of time. So that was very... And the other one was shag carpet. Oh, man, did Mom want some shag carpet. To the extent that we had the entire weekend, we had two rooms. We had, like, the living room, like, in a, like... It was a proper living room. You didn't actually live in it. You weren't allowed to live in it. It was the room that had the fancy couch and the fancy chair and all the shag carpet. And if you went in there, you would get killed. That's how what a living room was. You were never allowed. Once a year, when the preacher came round, we would sit with the preacher with no snacks on the shag carpet and talk about how... We always live like this.
Very wise not to have snacks on the shag.
No,
carpet.
Wouldn't have it.
That's very hard to clean.
Then we had some. We had one of those the first time. My mom had no idea. We had an old vacuum cleaner that had like a turbo spinning top. And the first time she took that into the shag, she ripped up the first section that it hit. Dad thought that was hilarious, given what had happened with the car.
Yeah. So your family had two efforts to sort of climb above its social station, and both failed.
That's why we change church so often. New group, new chance at sophistication.
New heaven that might look after it. New God to look after us better. Gene Kitson, do you remember that time that various things were the height of sophistication?
Well, we never had Charles Aznavour or anything like that. We had Max Miller. I love to go swimming with women. That was about all I can remember from the music. And Doris Day, she had this song, you know, and my dad used to play them over and over again. Max Miller was funny songs about women, swimming with women. And Doris Day had this song. I've never heard it anywhere else except on an old LP we had. And it was, how lovely cook some meat. Oh, how lovely cook some meat. When he gets back home to eat, oh, how lovely, cook some meat. And I wonder to this day whether it was some sort of euphemism. But however, I took it at face value. But our sophistication was really French in some ways because, you know, we thought cocktail onions. Remember cocktail onions? They came in green and purple and blue. And then we had...
And you put a little toothpick in them, didn't you?
And you put a toothpick in
them.
And you had smoked oysters on... Clicks biscuits.
What about devils on horseback?
Well, that's right. Yeah. Prunes around bacon. That was the height of sophistication. A TV unit was about as sophisticated as you could get, and it always had some bottle of green, something green sitting on top of it. You know, the record player and the cocktail cabinet all in one. Mm.
So when in your family, when someone said, "What's on TV?" you said, "A green bowl."
Yeah. No, a bottle of green.
Could you imagine that
liqueur I'm talking about?
The prawn cocktail became quite. Yeah. You know, famous in the 70s, but Mom didn't realize, and so she thought it was supposed to be like a liquid, so she pureed the prawns.
Oh!
She took the cocktail part of it.
Yeah, it was like a martini glass. She like food processed the prawns and the cocktail sauce together, and it was this. But you imagine what it looked like.
It would like be like a seafood dip.
So she served it quite proudly. Prawn cocktail, everyone.
She is the original person who came the raw prawn,
isn't
she?
Bad.
She's the one.
Bad.
that we had curried eggs. Remember curried eggs were... And coq au vin, well, that was French and sophisticated, although in my day it described the weekend, really. Oh, well.
Thank God it's Friday.
Thank God it's Friday with Richard Glover.
No swaffling in the van. Gene Kitson, Tommy Dean and Gary Eck are with us on Thank God It's Friday. Now, a German doctor has created a special suit which medical students can wear to give them a sense of what it's like to be old. This is to help them feel more empathy for their ageing patients. The suit has earmuffs so you can't hear much, a yellow visor so everything you see is a bit blurred, and it's got kind of pads on the knees and the elbows that make it difficult to move. It sounds great, doesn't it? especially on my birthday. If students were to wear a suit to simulate your body with all its age-related problems, what would it feature? Gene Kitson.
Well, Richard, I actually don't count myself as old, but however, if I want a preview, I'd put on a Richard suit, really. A green velvet jacket and... and jeans and scuffed it. Yes. No, anyway, being older than medical students is not hard, as they're all about 11, I have found. And it would take more than an old suit, I think. You'd have to give them really powerful diuretics while they're out shopping so that they know what it means when you can't find a toilet. And you'd have to train people in shops to look right through them and serve the person standing behind them. And the suits would be simple. All you'd get is a rusty set of old-style armour. I think, what do you call it? Armour, steel armour. Yeah. And so that you couldn't bend or run, and when you fall over, you can't get up again. And it would be lined inside with something that would be farting and leaking and hairy, I would say. And, and then the whole eye thing, I could go on and on. I'll wait to hear from the boys first. I'm not going to give too much away. There's a whole,
In terms of your ambassadorial duties, it would be heated as well, wouldn't it?
Heated? Oh.
As an ambassador for menopause.
Oh, heat. Yeah, oh, wow. Heated. I thought you were talking about some sort of speculum or something. I had no idea what you were saying. I certainly think something heated for a speculum, certainly. And, I see menopause. Yes. It would be very hot and humid and it would be moist and it would be... You'd have armour that would have hot soup poured inside it every few minutes and then you couldn't get it off because you were, trapped inside it. And I'm also the ambassador for macular degeneration, so you'd probably have to wear contact lenses. It had a stigma in one eye and macular degeneration in another eye and you get stiffness. And what the trouble is about being old is when you go, because my parents are quite elderly now, and it's not that they ever complain about the stiffness and the macular degeneration and all that. It's when they go to the doctors actually don't care so much. Not their own doctor, I have to say that. he's very, very nice. But sometimes, in some cases when you're older and you go to the doctor, because... not just the stiffness and aches, but because you get sharp, horrible, stabbing pains in your chest, or you feel like someone is sitting on you, or someone's just dropped a 10-ton weight on your foot. It's sort of, pain, incredible pain, not just aches. But the doctors just don't really care. They just know you're going to die, so they just give you a whole lot of drugs so that you're so drugged up, you don't care if you die either. So that should just come with it, I think, a little bag.
That's the method. Gary,
I know I've worked with Gene many years. I'm aware of your unfailing optimism. It's one of your greatest features, your optimism. And you said at the top of this that you don't see yourself as old, which I think is great. But at what point do you admit that you're the spokesperson for how many degenerative diseases before you have to say, well, maybe?
Are you really implying that menopause is a degenerative disease?
I need to read the literature. I need to read the literature closer to be sure.
Tell me,
it could just be internal climate change.
That's right. What it is.
Now, if you're going to build the sage suit that they're building in Germany, Tommy.
If you want to walk in the shoes of Tommy Dean, so to speak, here's what your suit will feature. You'll have 3-foot stilts. Instead of shoes to sort of recreate that sort of falling down at all times walking gait that I have. Never quite sure underfoot the earth. Secondly, you have to have something hooked into your calves that cramp around the eighth step of any inclined surface that you're walking up. Then, in your ears, you have to have earmuffs that block the sound in your right ear, but occasionally opens up and lets you hear everything quite loudly. But then normally stays down. So that once every third or fourth day, that'll happen for about a minute. And then on your left ear, you'll hear normally, except every couple of 10, 12 minutes, a screaming, piercing sound will rip through your left ear, which normally sometimes opens up the right ear. That's exciting. But mostly, what's the most important is you'll have vision goggles that, for all of this stumbling, bumbling, difficulty to hear that you get through, every time you walk past a mirror, you think, how hot am I?
See, with all those diseases, you should be the spokesman for the degenerative diseases. It should be you.
Then every time I look at myself in the mirror, I think they're not ready for me yet.
Yeah.
Right. Not ready yet.
You forgot to mention where the bong goes in your suit. Sorry.
What's in your suit, Gary?
I thought you said bongo.
A bong.
I'm with you now.
Oh, bong.
You're right.
The audience
what are you
wasn't.
Talking about? I'm not some sort of hippie drum circle guy. You insult me, sir.
No, I said bong.
Oh, that. Right over there. It's like a backpack. I hide it as a vacuum.
Yeah.
But it has the blow function.
What's in your suit,
Gary? Can I just comment on the suit the German guy, the doctor, has made? Yeah. I mean, I just think it's a stupid idea, really.
Well, it's just trying to bring empathy to the students.
Well, if you want to, get young people to have empathy, for old people, why don't they just get the young people to actually listen to old people?
Yeah.
And listen to what they have actually got to say, because they might actually learn something rather than just ignore them.
Yeah. Or, well, we're listening to you, Gary, so go ahead.
I know.
Or, build a suit for the old people that makes them move younger.
Yeah, exactly. Make them feel like they're,
Bring them back.
Brilliant.
It'd be great to see all these old people wearing like Superman suits.
Yeah. So build a youth suit.
A youth suit. I mean, I don't know. The suit that he's got is probably just the base model that he's created. I mean, there's probably like an advanced, like super deluxe model suit, which obviously probably not a suit. It's probably just a coffin. But you just lie in it and get the real feeling of. There's quite a few old people in here tonight.
Hey, well, it'll be a fun youth suit. It'll be nice to have an old person walk past you. Hey, turn it up. That music is not loud enough. Come on. Are you listening or what?
Who were the winners and losers of the week? Tommy Dean.
I thought the big winner of the week was, and I know we're going back to last week, and what could have been a glorious chocolate wheel moment here, but Baby Alfie lived. Oh, I'm so happy.
On the program last week, you threatened the writer of Offspring, who is my partner, and you said you know where we live, and you'd come down and hunt her down if on Offspring the baby died.
But to be fair, I thought it was okay to do that because you had made it quite clear in your show earlier this year that I was never allowed to have a relationship with her.
I did.
So I didn't feel like I was, putting anything at risk. Yeah. So, and to be fair, there was some anger left over from that.
Yeah. Well, I just said I didn't mind her having a relationship, but it had to be with someone less attractive than me.
Yeah.
And, you're more attractive than me. So
in that case, I'm back on Google. Yeah, right. So. But, so that was, my wife was very thrilled because I was given privy to what was going to happen early because I, have a thing with the writer. And that was a big winner.
What's your thing?
All I'm saying is TV Land in our world is happy until next season. Until we find out what happens next.
Alfie lived.
So that's very exciting.
That's the winner. Alfie's the winner. Who's the loser?
I think the big loser in general, and this is just speaking in general, is the owner of this pen.
It's my pen.
I just snapped in half. I apologize for that.
This is very large comedy.
I thought the big loser this week was the entire carbon tax argument. Again, it continues to flail on, and I wish we never had it explained to us properly before it started. It's been implemented. It's still not been properly explained. I just really wish, for all the technical writers in the world, someone could tell me exactly what this carbon... We figured out the particle that gives other particles mass, and we still can't have a simple policy explained to us.
It's why Daryl Lee went bust, it was the carbon tax.
You're on fire today, Richard.
Winners and losers, Gary Eck.
The winner is, I've nominated Katie Holmes, or Katie Three Holmes, now that the divorce is official. She's given up her, faith in Scientology, and she's put it in a much safer organisation, the Catholic Church, because they've got an impeccable history. So she's my winner, and my loser is Qantas, because I read today they've slipped in the world rankings, I think from number 7 down to number 15, which is sad, really, because, you know, I love Qantas. I always fly Qantas. I love the fact that I can drive to the airport knowing that I can take my time because, you know, the plane's going to be delayed. you know, the cockpit's on fire or something, the engine's fallen off. You know, it's comforting to know that.
That you,
know. You
can be 3 hours late and three still hours late. Not miss the flight. Very quickly, winners and losers. Jean.
The losers of the week are the Olympic athletes who are all over, you know, like they're all around 6 foot, let's face it, or more, and they have to sleep on those beds, which are 5'3". They're built for hobbits, and the winners of the week are the Rolling Stones, who turn 50, which makes them one-third as old as Keith Richards.
Please thank, ladies and gentlemen, Jean Kitson, Tommy Dean and Gary Eck. Thanks for being part of TGIF. For podcasts and to grab free tickets to be part of our studio audience, just put the words TGIF page into Google and you'll find us. Next week, Tommy Dean, Will Anderson and Rebecca De Unamuno with music from Eddie Perfect. Until then, thank God it's Friday.